You are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to episode 74 of the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, political scientist at the University of Copenhagen. Connect with the show by following us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast and sign up for the newsletter on our website, socialmediaandpolitics.org. All right, y'all. Thanks so much for tuning in. Today, we're going to look at what's going on in the cutting edge of American political campaigning with Adam Meldrum. He is a founding and managing partner at AdVictory, which is a digital ad management platform and service specializing in data optimization, targeting, and delivery. And AdVictory has worked with a number of leading Republican clients, including Governor Bruce Rauner from Illinois, Doug Burgum from North Dakota, and senators such as Ben Sasse from Nebraska and Rand Paul from Kentucky. So Adam's built up a huge wealth of knowledge in this space. And we're going to talk about some of the techniques that are moving it forward, particularly in terms of ad buys, looking at targeting streaming devices versus connected TVs, looking at the use of chatbots in a recent election with Governor Bill Lee from Tennessee. So overall, a super fascinating interview. Without further ado, I'm going to cut right to it. My guest is Adam Meldrum, founding and managing partner at AdVictory. Adam, thanks for taking the time out and welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate it as well.
So just to start off and set the stage a bit, I mean, you've been working for digital campaigns with a number of leading Republican strategists, governors, legislators, senators, congressmen. My first question is, what drew you to digital and what type of work have you been doing in the space so far?
Thank you. Yeah, it's a kind of interesting path into the digital world. I definitely started off with more of just a traditional campaign background, in the political comms, press shops of campaigns, which was kind of a nice way to go about it because so much of digital these days overlays and fits in with other departments. You know, I really tend not to view digital as its own department, but really kind of something that plays along and touches all the different departments and political campaigns. So that background in grassroots and the press side of things and the political side of things, was really where I started, particularly in the McCain campaign in 2008 when he was running for president. I was just kind of coming out of college and had the opportunity to work with his campaign very early on before it was even a presidential full-blown campaign. I think it was even just a PAC or exploratory committee when I joined on. And then in the summer of 2007, the campaign had gone through some troubles in terms of fundraising and polling, and a lot of staff was let go and moved on to other things. I was in a position just coming out of college where I could kind of just pick up and move to D.C. And join the campaign when they didn't have a lot of resources or funds to pay a ton of people. So stepped in and was part of a really cool team on the political side, doing a lot of things that kind of helped and was part of a big comeback in his campaign, and ended up with probably a role I probably wasn't qualified for at the time. But because I had kind of stuck around and been there when nobody else was, saw the campaign all the way through the general, which was a cool experience. But after that, just kind of had the bug for campaigns and did some governor's races, some Senate races around the country, and really just kind of became, at those days back in like 2007, 2010, people tended to kind of just look at the young people in the room and assume they knew digital and they could help with those types of things. So it's not even really where I was in politics at that time, but I wanted to make sure I had the answers because people kept asking me the questions. So I started to really dig into kind of making sure, I kind of had my thoughts together and talents in order on the website building and kind of blogging was big back then, and that type of communication that evolved into some different types of technology, database talents that I gravitated towards. And that kind of all segued into kind of now where you have the intersection of digital campaigns and data and digital voter contact and launching AdVictory in 2015.
Yeah, and I want to ask you a bit more about that as we move along. But first, I want to ask, because I've heard a couple campaigners talk about this bug, catching the campaign bug. What is that all about?
It's funny. It's a really unique environment to work in. I had a mentor of mine once compare political campaigns to startups. You go through this really fast growth period as a startup. You make all your money in one day, votes in this case, and then the next day you're out of business, win or lose. And was kind of a unique analogy that always stuck with me. But it's an exciting type of environment to work in because it's always new every year. You're going through different cycles, you're joining new campaigns, different parts of the country, the political dynamics are always changing. You know, you're working with new people all the time. You kind of get a hard reset, which is unique in the business world, especially in AdVictory and kind of doing more of the business consulting side of it now than just a campaign staffer. You kind of get a hard reset on your client base, which is interesting. You know, most of, particularly in the marketing side, you're working with brands longer term or over a life cycle. You know, you kind of a fun part of it on the vendor side now is you get this hard reset every 2 years of, you know, some clients stick with you to certain degrees, but you're kind of, you know, launching new programs, new initiatives, wrapping whole new elements of branding around campaigns as they start up and as they go through. So I think that's part of it. It just kind of is always exciting, always something new.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're acquiring new skills every time you roll up the sleeves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they definitely sharpen, you know, every year. There's new things that, especially in the digital space, things are changing. You have this exponential kind of growth, exponential, you know, kind of just evolution year to year. So you're building off that every cycle. It's a fun space to be in.
Mm. And I want to ask you a bit about different messaging tactics, I guess, for different tiers of government. But first, let's talk a little bit about AdVictory itself. It's a platform, but what exactly does it do?
So AdVictory is a you know, technology stack that's kind of built around servicing digital voter contact. One of the things that's different than, you know, maybe the brand world where you have you're marketing to like a wide swath of people and you're trying to kind of hone in on who you want to reach and how they're interacting and how you're making a sale or how you're making a conversion. The political voter contact is a lot different. There's a lot of things that are the same, but it's different in the sense that you kind of start with this more finite group of people that you're going after. And sometimes that can be a really finite group of people when you talk about, you know, a voter list that's built off specific models or based off polling data, or different kinds of voter ID work that happens over the course of a campaign that you want to target for various reasons. So what we try to do with AdVictory, you know, with our background and other types of voter contact in polling and in mail work and in phone work, and some other technologies and databasing that I have been involved in, kind of wrap a technology stack around voter contact that lended itself more towards those types of executions. And there's not, like I said, there's a lot of things that are similar in the brand world, and there's a lot of things that are different. So we really try to focus on that. And then we tried to, you know, really have a nice analytics and reporting package tied into it, integrated with it, that we built around, that allowed our customers and the clients we're servicing to get some real-time feedback into how things are performing. So we have great little dashboard tool for our clients to log into and to generate reports that kind of understand how spends are happening, what's happening with reach and frequency from an audience perspective, you know, in close to real time, as that's a big part of political messaging and in terms of reaching the right people and how many times, what messages, and that whole kind of linear messaging path that you want to take people down through the course of a campaign. So our services really focus, you know, a lot around those types of things and making those work for political campaigns.
Mm, interesting. And I guess we'll pick apart some of those dynamics as we go along. But I wanted to ask first, because you've worked with campaigns at different levels of government, from gubernatorial races to Senate races, Congress races. Do you notice a difference in digital campaigning for, you know, let's say a governor position versus one that's maybe more national in scope, like the Senate?
Yeah, that's a great point about, you know, kind of, I always call it nationalizing a race. And Senate races, even though they're statewide and very similar to a gubernatorial race, they tend to be definitely, like, as you mentioned, you know, much more national in scope in terms of the issues, the conversation, the political dynamics of the country. You know, oftentimes from a presidential level or from Congress as a whole are driving the ebbs and flows of those campaigns. The issues are a lot more, you know, big picture and cerebral in terms of, you know, foreign policy related things that you're kind of touching around. So, you know, those messages tend to be a lot more, a lot more geared towards those directions and the nuances of how you communicate those things. Gubernatorial campaigns, you know, while they're also statewide and they're large in many degrees, you know, the issues that you're dealing with are more localized. You're dealing with, you know, somebody who's running for an executive type of position versus a representative type of position, which is kind of a unique dynamic in terms of the stuff you're trying to communicate and the assurances you're trying to get across to voters about, you know, how this individual will perform once they're elected. And you deal with a lot more local types of things too. So the way you want to message to people and the way the mediums often that you need to deliver things into are more localized. You know, the imagery is more local, the verbiage is more local, and kind of you want to tailor that to what people are used to in their states or their territories. And you're dealing with a lot more local activists sometimes in a gubernatorial campaign and using them to kind of be your influencers. Whereas a national kind of Senate race, maybe you're working with more national type of influence and those types of things as an echo chamber. So those kind of dynamics are always kind of playing off one another a little bit there.
Yeah, and that follows well into my next question, which has to deal with, I mean, although you've been working with different candidates, they tend to come from the Midwest region, like Michigan, North Dakota, Illinois. So I wanted to ask, is there something to that regional focus? Is there maybe a Midwestern style of campaigning, or does it help to have a feet on the ground on those kind of Midwestern issues?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I never really reflected on that much in terms of the races. Politics is a very tribal kind of, especially the business of politics is a very tribal kind of world. So I think to a certain degree, I've kind of run in circles or have just a better network in the Midwest, or you know, maybe that's this side of the country where I live. So that might play into it a little bit there. I've certainly done some races out West in different capacities. Susana Martinez, New Mexico, did some things there. Sharon Angle was running for U.S. Senate in Nevada against Harry Reid. Not too long ago, which was a really crazy race, being the Senate Majority Leader at the time, a U.S. Senate race in Colorado. And, you know, those races, I wouldn't say they were different in terms of the style of campaigning. I think there's a lot of things, even from year to year in campaigns, that never really change. It's, you know, it's kind of the same playbook to a certain degree with at a high level, and then, you know, different new kind of tactics and strategies kind of evolving and wrapping around that. I will say the issues are probably a lot different. They're just different in terms of, you know, the economies of those states are different. Just the landscape is different. And those type of things, I think, really, really did play into how working out West maybe was a little bit different than Midwestern or East Coast campaigns.
And how do you actually start to get an idea about what message or what issues you're going to actually promote on the campaign trail? Is that something that you as a consultant are brought in to help with, or is it more kind of coming from the campaign and politician themselves?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, definitely there's times where digital, and I think more so digital, is getting to a position where they can kind of drive that conversation and contribute to that narrative in campaigns with some of the insights and analytics that we're able to bring to the table, and some of the new survey methodology and things that you can do from a digital side to kind of impact those conversations. But I definitely do come from a background, you know, that was, you know, polling focused, you know, traditional polls or IVR kind of polling, email to a certain degree. So I think those things, you know, focus groups, those things are really in larger campaigns anyway that have the resources to do that, and some that, as the barriers to entry have kind of been pushed down a little bit for campaigns to access those type of tools. I think those things are always really driving the conversation. And then, you know, you're always looking at the candidate a little bit. You tend to do things that are basic kind of marketing 101, SWOT analysis, strength, weakness, opportunity kind of things. And really, you want your voice of the campaign to reflect the candidate. And there's differences in that, you know, like Rick Snyder, the former governor of Michigan, who I was involved with his campaigns. He was a really tech forward, you know, came from a tech background at Gateway Computers. And he really had this whole, you know, new media focus to his campaign, technology driven, was going to be that kind of leader. And other campaigns, you know, the candidate's voice is different. So those things really drive a lot of the conversation too. Mm.
Yeah. And I want to ask you about precisely those digital channels. So, I mean, and particularly social media, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. How do you see these different social media kind of fitting into an overall campaign operation? What's their value, and maybe where are they not so valuable?
Yeah, they are very different. I think it's a great point. And it's really something that I try to focus on more. And I think a lot of digital strategists are getting to, especially as things kind of converge between, you know, more traditional linear TV and that kind of video versus, you know, online video, premium pre-roll. And then you have this weird, you know, CTV, connected TV, over the top TV kind of space in the middle. As all those things type to bridge together, you know, this media mix is where I really put a lot of my time in figuring out what's the right media mix to reach people with, and to do things like, you know, conversion type of stuff, performance marketing versus persuasion and messaging. And I think those, you know, some of the things you mentioned really do, you know, have their strengths and weaknesses along those lines. You know, Facebook is a really good tool for conversion type of stuff, as well as the granular kind of audience targeting you can do there. Campaigns often don't have, you know, the budget in order, or the dynamics are so rapidly changing. They don't have, you know, long-term kind of messaging media plans in place as much as maybe some corporate and bigger brands do that plan out their media buys, you know, over the course of a whole year and pre-book inventory and all those types of things. So there's a lot of dynamics in the media mix landscape that happens in campaigns. So Facebook's always a really great tool. If you want to, you know, you got these people you want to get in front of, maybe you're looking to do some conversions, you need to get some media up and running. You don't have too much time to worry about optimizing, but you want to make sure the right eyeballs are seeing it with some good inventory. You know, Facebook's a really good tool for that. You know, then you have, you know, stuff like YouTube and Google Video inventory. as well as all the brand lift kind of things you can do there that's really, really good for good viewable, more persuasion type of messaging, message sequencing, you know, moving people through two or three or four, especially you get these shorter kind of, you know, 6 second, 15 second videos that work well in political that you can kind of build off one another. You know, that's a great inventory pool for those types of things. Twitter is really interesting because, you know, it's good to reach people, but the persuasion side of Twitter is maybe a little bit fleeting just because of the way the people interact with the platform. But Twitter is a really great tool for driving a messaging narrative and kind of, you know, the press are on Twitter. So building kind of an echo chamber of those types of things that can maybe bleed into earned media narratives in a campaign. Twitter's a really, really good tool for that because those people are there and they're following it and they're really engaged with the platform. And that engagement, you know, is an interesting thing too. You know, Instagram, platforms like Instagram and Snapchat, while they're different in terms of, you know, kind of maybe longer form persuasion messaging, just because of the way people use the platform, you know, one of the nice things about them is that the users of those platforms are very, very engaged. You know, hands on keyboard, hands on phone, you know, scrolling through that platform, and you know, their attention isn't driven away from it. So those platforms, to me, make up really good platforms for retargeting. You know, once you know that you have a user that you care about has visited your website, or maybe that's interacted with another piece of content, and you can match them on Instagram or Snapchat because of their pixels, those become really good platforms to make sure and give you a good avenue to reach those people. So all those things together, you know, kind of go into what, you know, one thing I focus on a lot is called the overall media mix and different weights and different budget thresholds for your different goals that go into kind of getting that right for how to put together an overall kind of outreach plan.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that a bit. It's interesting you mentioned the difference between kind of brands and campaigns in terms of their kind of layout for their advertising. So the first question I have for you is, how do you see advertising on these platforms versus organic reach? Because, I mean, you know, we've seen Facebook drop their organic reach by, you know, a ton. Is it really geared towards advertising only, or is there a role for organic content as well?
I think there's definitely a role for organic content. And I think the two really play off each other a little bit. You know, you can kind of use advertising to give legs, for lack of a better word, to organic content and give it a little boost, as Facebook would kind of fit nicely with their branding for how they classify their advertising. And also, you know, getting people looped in. You know, the one thing that advertising does do nicely in these platforms that's maybe a little bit different than the programmatic space or even Google space is that it engages people with your pages or with your Twitter account, with your Facebook page. So all that pay that you're pushing out there, you know, does have kind of a leverage, gives you the ability to leverage a little bit of latent value there in terms of you're bringing people back to your page, they're engaging with it, you can reach them better with organic content down the road. But I certainly think, you know, especially you look at social channels, you know, getting things to go viral, when you have those moments in a campaign and, you know, as a digital consultant, I'm sure a lot of my colleagues and you have, you know, heard funny stories about clients or people coming to us and asking us to make something go viral. You know, how do I make this go viral? Well, you know, that's a difficult challenge to to be presented with. It's a little bit more kind of a lot of things have to fall in the right place for that to happen. But when that does happen, you know, that reach that they give you and what you're able to leverage from that in a social platform and the mix of that and paid is really powerful.
Yeah. And have you, in your experience with things that have gone viral, is it that you start off with a big promotion push to give it legs, or is it that it starts going viral on its own and then you jump in and promote it?
Well, you know, it's a little bit of both. You know, the ones that you want to go viral, usually maybe start off with a lot of planning and a little bit of pay behind it. And then maybe the ones you don't want to go viral start off a little bit more organically and a little bit outside of your control. But it definitely both can happen. I've seen both happen and both, you know, the outcome is equally as strong in both ways. Once something's out there and it's in the, you know, the digital ecosphere takes a hold of it, you know, it has a mind of its own, how it evolves a little bit.
Right. And then still sticking on this advertising idea, and with brands having their strategies laid out, I mean, of course, campaigns are more dynamic. You need to be more responsive to whatever's happening in the course of the campaign. Does that affect the pricing? I'm thinking of these kind of digital ad markets where you have to bid per cost. I mean, is that something that can really fluctuate in a campaign and has to be monitored quite closely?
Definitely, yeah. Especially as you get to the end of a campaign. One thing that, you know, I think a lot of smart strategists are starting to take into account more is not only the impact of your campaign in your marketplace, but the other ones in the state or in the country. You know, if you're running in a you know, a presidential election year and you're running a down ballot campaign in Ohio or Michigan, you know, any kind of target state, the presidential national campaigns are going to be bidding like crazy for inventory in those states against you on your down ballot race. It's going to drive up costs across the board. So that media mix plan that we talked about earlier, you know, really depends a lot on going and pre-booking inventory, you know, reserving, you know, locking things in at certain prices. There's always going to be kind of dynamic audience bidding that's happening. And you're going to try to kind of balance, you know, a cost benefit between the two of those things. So that media mix planning and audience centric targeting, especially as digital evolves, you know, digital at one point, especially digital video, had an inventory problem for a little while there because, you know, people were just starting to engage with video in a more premium way online. You know, you had all these things in digital video, you know, maybe in the 14 cycle or in the 16 cycle, you know, the in banner types of pre-roll and, you know, below the fold, you know, pre-roll and stuff. There was a lot of stuff out there that just wasn't good quality. You could audience target it well. You know, programmatic always gave you a good way to do that. But you had very little inventory control. Now, as people start to change the way they're consuming media, you know, the consumption model is changing where people are, you know, logging in with their cable subscription online and watching video content online, you know, that's real engaging. You know, you have over the top, you have YouTube TV, you know, connected TV, all the different apps people are logging into on their phones or their computer. You have all this now great new rich inventory that's treated a lot more like TV inventory. So the way that you can buy it maybe starts to fold a little bit more towards how TV was traditionally bought and all those types of things. So all those things playing off each other really change that landscape a little bit.
Yeah, I want to dive into that a bit because you've just won a couple of awards from campaign and elections for kind of using new technologies in the course of campaigning. And one of them happens to be exactly that connected TV dynamic with Governor Bruce Rauner's campaign. What was the story there?
Yeah, that was a really, really interesting. We were, you know, number one, it was an award we were excited to win. Ad Victory put a lot of time and attention going into the 28 cycle, kind of coming out of the 2016 cycle, really thinking that would be a rapidly evolving space and a lot of room for growth there and a lot of just new things to learn and try to perfect and do better for our clients in 2018 as be important part of it. So, you know, we invested a lot of time in there and really happy to kind of be rewarded with that, with a cool, you know, recognition from CNE this year for the OTT CTV program we did with Governor Rauner. Obviously, that race didn't work out well from a win perspective, but it was a massive, massive race in terms of spending on both sides, with Governor Rauner's campaign and now Governor Pritzker's campaign. So that, you know, kind of put everybody in this position. And we worked really closely with the Rauner team and their digital team, who were great, you know, the whole way through and along with the rest of the campaign, to do a lot of that pre-booking of that inventory, you know, kind of focus and do a lot of audience analytics on who were the cord cutters in these states, in terms of voters we wanted to reach, who were the cord shavers, the cord neverers, all those types of things that were cut off, that weren't going to get the broadcast, that weren't going to get, you know, the massive amounts of broadcast that was happening, that weren't going to get the massive amounts of cable, and kind of customize out ways, custom build ways to reach them through content they were engaging with online, whether it was, you know, kind of TV everywhere type of content or OTT or CTV. But really that audience modeling really played into kind of how we structured those media buys and the channels we wanted to reach people on, going out and pre-booking that inventory, making sure that we took that kind of inventory into account when we were planning out the rest of our media mix. But it was a really cool campaign that had a lot of resources available to do that in an effective way. And we were pretty proud of the way we did it. It was a great initiative for us to learn.
And does that relate? I mean, I'm thinking age is going to be the biggest demographic change there between people who are watching streaming TV versus our regular TV. Is that the case?
I think there's an interesting break there, and certainly it does lead it to a little bit younger, more affluent demographic, especially in big cities like, you know, in Illinois, in the Rauner race, you had Chicago there, which is a massive media market, and the outlying kind of suburban area there, which was an interesting part. But you do tend to see an interesting kind of older demographic, too, that's moving away from cable, inexpensive cable subscriptions, and maybe it's a budgetary issue, you know, it's kind of funny. Some of the research we did, we actually had a lot of feedback from older, you know, 50 plus, that their grandkids or their kids were helping them kind of figure out that and navigate that landscape and getting it set up for them in order to cut costs in their monthly bills or a lot of different dynamics there, which was kind of interesting to learn about. But so I think it definitely does skew, you know, kind of young professional a little bit, but I think you're rapidly seeing it, you know, just kind of catch on in a number of different ways.
Got it. Now, this is the one I'm most curious about, which is your use of chatbots in Governor Bill Lee's campaign in Tennessee. What were you doing with chatbots?
That was a great use case. It was a really fun program. I happened to, kind of going back to you know, those, the example I brought up, you know, earlier in the McCain campaign days about just being the young person in the room that kind of got asked the questions about those types of things. Now I'm certainly not the young person in the room anymore, but I am the digital person in the room. So I get asked these questions a lot about stuff. So more and more I heard, you know, about AI and those types of kind of conversational chatbot workflows and how that might be used, or questions about how that could be used to work in campaigns. So really, really dug into it and just took it upon myself and our team to kind of learn that space and figure out kind of what we thought were cool ways, you know, to implement it, particularly with Facebook, because so much of our media spend, you know, was happening from a targeted voter perspective in Facebook in terms of the list matching capabilities and audience targeting that you can do there. And as Messenger really started to evolve from a user base perspective, especially, you know, even more so now when Facebook's going to kind of combine the inventory from WhatsApp and Instagram and Facebook Messenger, I think that even broadens the scope a lot. But we were just thinking of different ways that we could leverage, I always call it latent value in digital. And I know I said that earlier, but I think it's a really cool concept because so much of what happens with digital, you have all this latent value that you can kind of leverage. You know, with a phone program or a mail program, not to take anything away from those mediums because I think they're very valuable in campaigns, but it's kind of a one touch and then you're done type of thing. You know, you make a phone call, maybe you get some data back from it, but that phone call is done. The mail program hits and then it's done. With digital, you know, you have all these, you know, kind of retargeting things you can do. You have audience analytics you can leverage from that based on who's engaging and all this latent value that we're always trying to figure out ways to give campaigns more value from. So with the chatbot, we were just kind of thinking that, well, we have people that are engaging with our content. You know, they're clicking on our Facebook ads, we're targeting them. How can we get more out of it? You know, so dumping them into a Messenger workflow from engagement with the ad. And then, you know, we started to look at what are the normal traditional things you want to do from a campaign perspective once you get somebody on the phone or once you're at their door. Well, you want to ask some questions, you want to learn something about them. So we started kind of working people through these different surveys and asking them if they were going to vote early, how they were going to vote. And the great thing about these chatbots is that you can kind of build out, you know, different, you know, messaging tracks based on how people are answering and guide them through these conversational workflows. We were just kind of playing with different ways to do that. You know, one of the things we landed on, particularly with Governor Lee, relative to the kind of the award we won, as you mentioned, was a GOTV, a Get Out the Vote program, where we had this really finite targeted group of people that we were looking to target at the end, engage, you know, if we needed to persuade them or if we just needed to make sure they showed up. So we were, you know, doing things like asking people to pledge to vote, helping them find their polling place. Spread our messaging if, you know, we're giving them different kinds of video content to share with their friends and family, which is also great in the social platform. So the GOTV program was really kind of where we landed on making that work in a Lee campaign. And it was a cool example and successful. We're happy with it.
Yeah. And I mean, we had some guys who were working with chatbots from the advocacy space. And so one of their main sells was that you can, you know, make these decision trees or get these type of free text responses and then do some data analysis on the back end with those. Were you doing that, like sentiment or clustering of certain topics, anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, we were moving, you know, based on how people responded to certain elements of the poll or what they said we were going to do. You know, the nice thing about Messenger too, and some of the other, you know, chatbot platforms are a little bit different just because of the way you can interact with them afterwards. You know, is going to be a bot you build on your website. It's going to be a little bit different than something you're building through Messenger. But with Messenger particularly, you know, I almost equated it to building an email list, you know, moving forward, is you get all these people that you're looking to get email acquisitions off of. So you can email them down the road and raise money from them or communicate to them later. Well, you know, building an opt-in Messenger list to me is that same kind of thing now, where you're going to get people to opt in, whether it's through a bot or organically. You're going to get people to opt in your Messenger program, and you can blast message them through messengers like you do with email. The open rates are sky high right now as that changes. So based on those answers, like you said, about how people were responding, we were kind of able to bucket them in different categories and give them different messages after the fact. And this year, really going into the 2020 cycle, we're really focused on different ways that we can do that and analyze that and segment those things up and kind of really leverage that high open rate and engagement from Messenger through those types of things.
Yeah, it's super interesting. I guess my last question for you has to deal with this public controversy around political ad targeting. I mean, particularly with Facebook in the spotlight and, you know, having this political ad archive that's coming out. I mean, are you feeling these pressures on the ground? Is it changing your campaigning in any way?
You know, I don't know that pressure is the right word. I mean, it's certainly changing things. And I think maybe the most impactful thing that happened from a pressure perspective was just the implementation timeline. This stuff happened in last cycle. You know, it was obviously a very, very big thing coming out of the presidential cycle for a number of reasons. And I think it took everybody a little bit of time to figure out what to do from that. But these things were, you know, implemented in September and October of election years. And anybody who's done campaigns before knows that, you know, really the everything hits the fan at that point. No matter how well your planning is, no matter what's going on, you know, it's a free for all in those 2 months going into the November election. So for these things to get implemented and asked to, you know, have your clients fill out all these new details and get all this information from your clients and register, from an implementation point of view, that was an absolute nightmare, and added a layer of complexity on top of an already very complex and stressful time. So that was probably the toughest challenge with it. But I think it's all good stuff, though. You know, from a disclosure point of view, I don't think any of it's really an issue, and seems to make sense. And for the most part, everybody seems really happy to comply with. I think it gives you, you know, it opens up this whole new world of digital competitive, you know, TV competitive, is a really interesting space in the TV world for what your opponents are doing and getting some insight and building your plans around your opponent's TV competitive. And that's how all public. So I think, you know, this is going to really open up this digital competitive, you know, frankly, even a new marketplace for a different level of services around that type of thing, that people, the digital consultants and the other types of consultants maybe even offer. So having that window into those things, I think, is really cool. And that's impacting, you know, I think tactics and strategy a lot in terms of, you know, the window you're able to get it now into what your opponents are doing and vice versa.
Uh-huh. So you mean actually using those archives to kind of see what age demographics or what genders is my opponent targeting?
Totally. Or just what's working. You know, there's so much A-B testing that goes on in digital with, you know, different creative variants that are happening. And one thing we tried to do last cycle was, you know, really rudimentarily as this thing got launched was, you know, you could look at your opponents, kind of what they were doing, and you could see, you know, they spent a little bit of money on this one, a little bit of money on this one. And you kind of tell it was a testing period. And now all of a sudden the usage of this one really spiked and impressions really spiked and delivery really spiked. So maybe they landed on something there they felt was working for whatever reason. So you could look at that and analyze, oh, okay, well, why do they think that's working for them? And maybe glean some insight into the strategies and stuff that way. So, and I think that's all above board. And I think that's all fair game these days, but I think that's, you know, a whole cool new level of expertise that you'll be able to bring into a campaign by being able to have a window into that.
Absolutely. Super interesting. Okay. One last question for you. And that is just about your take on the sort of future strategies moving forward. What should we look out for in 2020 in terms of new tech developments, new strategies? Where do you see the space moving forward?
I think you're going to see a lot more go towards like brand lift types of stuff and machine learning with delivery and advertising and voter contact. You know, one of the nice things about digital, and Google has done a really good job with this, in my opinion, is optimizing these brand lift studies in real time, kind of delivering in concert with your digital campaigns and be able to get real time feedback about what types of lift you're getting with certain segments, how your media is impacting people, and then optimize, you know, delivery based off of those types of things. So you can kind of have, you know, which is a really cool tool if you have, especially a bunch of different creative concepts in the mix. If you have six or seven different creative concepts in the mix, you can kind of have your media start to optimize towards the age and demos that it seems to be most impacting through a lift study. So you have this really data-driven, real-time way to not only get feedback, but then to impact delivery in real time and message penetration and saturation. I think that's going to be a real cool tool. And the nice thing about that too is it kind of ties in both to a, you know, a technology perspective, but it also depends a lot on kind of hands on keyboard and setting up these studies in the right way and analyzing them the right way and assigning budget accordingly. You know, it also takes this human element to it to kind of drive it a little bit, which is a really nice kind of 1-2 punch where I feel like digital, you know, can really start to be more impactful because of that. And I think definitely you're going to see, you know, the convergence of just the media consumption model from people changing more towards, you know, TV content online, connected TV, OTT stuff we talked about, you know, that bridge that's happening between that type of delivery and that type of inventory is going to continue to evolve and change and be an important part of campaigns.
Never a dull moment. But Adam, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your insights with us.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
I've just been speaking with Adam Meldrum, founding and managing partner at AdVictory. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast. Thank you again for tuning in. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, follow us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast, and sign up for the newsletter at socialmediaandpolitics.org. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Copenhagen. See you next time.